You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in Wisconsin are going up. We'll talk with a doctor about how healthcare workers are coping and take your questions about the coronavirus. Now we're just two weeks away from Election Day. With many Wisconsinites already casting ballots, President Trump stopped in Janesville over the weekend to make his case.
This Election Day, the people of Wisconsin, and you know what? We win Wisconsin. We win the whole ball game. It's a... I mean, what the hell do you think I'm doing here on a freezing night with 45-degree winds? What do you think I'm doing this for my health? I'm not doing this for my health.
Our next guest is here to break down what the polling, fundraising numbers, and more could tell us about the state of the race, what Wisconsin means in the campaign, and what issues are at the top of the list for voters. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the presidential race? Have you attended a campaign rally or virtual event? Are you undecided? What do you need to hear or learn to make your decision? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, President Trump talked about the importance of Wisconsin in the race. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with him too much, right? Wisconsin, it's going to be tough for either side to win the race without winning states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. And I think we all remember in 2016, in the aftermath of the 2016 election, the oft-repeated phrase, Hillary Clinton never came to Wisconsin. And I think rightly attribute part of the reason why she lost to the fact that she made assumptions, her campaign made assumptions about Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, as you indicated. And this year, the Democrats are certainly not going to be accused of making that same mistake. And clearly neither is the Trump campaign.
I want to give a listen to former Vice President Joe Biden in another battleground state, North Carolina, over the weekend, talking to an audience in their cars. Here's a listen.
I'm running as a proud Democrat, but I will govern as an American president. No red states, no blue states, just the United States. I promise you, I'll work as hard for those who don't support me as those who did. That's the job of a president, a duty to care for everyone in America.
Can you talk, Susan, a little bit about campaigning and how it works a little differently in this pandemic year?
I think that what we're seeing is quite a different campaigning style between the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign. And you alluded to the fact that Vice President Biden was speaking to people in their cars, and his campaign has very much been one that has been very high on the social distancing. So not only have his events been something like drive-in events, but they've been much smaller events where he and Kamala Harris, the vice presidential running mate, and others have been meeting with much smaller groups of voters. The Trump campaign, on the other hand, has been running a more traditional campaign. The president has been holding rallies, nothing to the size of the rallies he held in 2016 as a result of COVID-19 and his inability to hold rallies indoors for the most part. But he's been doing rallies like he did in Janesville this weekend all across the country, sometimes two in a day. And so on Saturday, he was in both Michigan and Wisconsin. And he gets a lot of energy from those rallies, and he's been really itching to get on the campaign trail and hold rallies. And so I think that he's really enjoying being out and about holding rallies. And, you know, unfortunately, Vice President Biden is someone who also likes personal interaction quite a bit. So I would think that it's been quite a struggle for him as a very people person to not be able to be out and about and speaking to voters in a way that he spent his whole career doing.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, 2 weeks out from voting day. I guess every day is voting day lately, but from the big finish to the campaign. You can join in with your thoughts and questions on the presidential race at 800-642-1234. Susan, another point that I think both campaigns agree on, the Biden campaign saying don't trust the polls. Biden could still lose. The Trump campaign saying don't trust the polls. Trump could still win. Doesn't seem like anybody wants people to take the polls seriously right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that very recently, over the weekend, in fact, the Biden campaign came out and said, don't believe the polls. And it was a call to make sure that his supporters are not getting complacent and making sure that the turnout operations are still going in full force, that people who might be planning on early voting or who have may perhaps received a ballot in the mail or something are going to make sure that they get those ballots turned in. And obviously, at the same time, you have the president's campaign team showing that he's trailing nationally and also in several key states. And it's not at all uncommon for the campaign that's down to also speak to not believing the polls. And I think that 2016 was a clear indication that you can't always believe what you see in the polls. And so I think that both campaigns are speaking truth when they say, you know, let's not pay attention to the polls. Let's just make sure we get our voters out.
Let's talk about the messages you're hearing from each campaign, starting with the incumbent President Trump. What are you hearing as he tries to close that apparent polling gap and close the deal here?
He's been trying to reinforce some of the key issues that have been central to his campaign. He's talking a lot about the economy and the economic recovery that he says is coming after the quick downturn that we saw as a result of the onslaught of COVID-19 in the spring. He's speaking about immigration. He's speaking a lot about issues related to law and order and different things to really rally his base of support.
And then the Biden campaign, what is their closing message looking like?
Their closing message seems to be the central theme seems to be that we are a much more responsible and responsive administration. And we are going to show you that in how we will take over the responsibility for managing the COVID-19 pandemic. Also speaking a lot about healthcare and also about the economy. And so in my mind, those three are all tied together, the economy, COVID, and healthcare. I think those are the three things that the Biden campaign has been really pushing hard on.
Now, on COVID-19, another message I guess the candidates seem to agree on, President Trump saying if elected, Joe Biden would listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Joe Biden saying, if I'm elected, I'll listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci. Some people have been making a lot of the president's attacks on Fauci and other top health officials. I don't know. What message does that send?
As someone who watches a lot of politics, as obviously you can imagine, sometimes when I see candidates say something, I think, oh, that'll make a great ad. And when I heard President Trump say, and I'm going to paraphrase, but when I heard President Trump say, if Joe Biden's elected, he's going to listen to the scientists, he's going to listen to Fauci, I thought, well, boy, that's going to make a great Biden ad. And I think it's already been turned into a Biden ad. So I think that some of the people in the Trump camp as well are concerned about the blatant attacks against science and against Dr. Fauci as sort of the personification of science, I think, for the president and in many people's minds. And I think that there's many in the Trump campaign who don't see that necessarily as a way to bring in people who might still be undecided. And yet the president seems to be becoming more aggressive in that regard in his attack on Fauci and attack on the science behind the COVID-19 pandemic.
Susan Johnson is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. She stays with us as we talk about the presidential campaign with in-person election day just 2 weeks away. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Has COVID-19 changed the way you think about this election? Have any TV or social media ads caught your attention? Have you donated to a presidential campaign? Are you hopeful that everything is going to go smoothly this time around? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with UW-Whitewater political scientist Susan Johnson, looking at the home stretch leading up to the end of voting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching the polls this election season? Have you already voted? Call 800-642-1234. What issue is important to you? What questions do you have in the home stretch? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Luke is with us in Gladstone, Michigan. Luke, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to make a comment of what I've noticed is that an incumbent president is running his campaign messaging as if he's not the incumbent, as if he hasn't been the president for the last 4 years. And I'll take your comments off there. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Susan. Do you have thoughts on what he had to say there? He says a president running like the outsider candidate, I guess, in some ways.
I would tend to agree with Luke's comments in the sense that you have a situation where where President Trump is speaking a lot about this idea of, I mean, just think about his slogan, Make America Great Again, that he toyed with moving on from, but that seems to be what people are still speaking about. And he's also, you know, doing different things in terms of his rallies and the things he's putting forward that tend to, yeah, I would agree with Luke that he's not necessarily running as an incumbent on a record in the way that you would expect a president would.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jack is with us in Elk Mound. Jack, hi.
Yeah, hi. Does your guest have a percent or number in mind of Wisconsin voters who are actually undecided at this point?
Thanks for the call. Susan, are you tracking the undecided polling, or do you have a good hunch?
In the last Marquette poll, I think the number was very small. So, you know, in the low single digits or mid single digits. And that's been pretty consistent, I would say, nationally in terms of the polling and then across the different states. So we haven't seen percentages, I would say, in most states and nationally of undecideds being over 5% or so. I'm thinking that most people have made a decision one way or the other. And the issue now is less about swaying those few undecideds and more about making sure that you get your voters out to the polls, be that today or on election day or any time in between.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that call. What do you think about how much voting is happening ahead of election day? It's not, you know, a brand new thing, but it's on a different scale, I think it's fair to say, Susan, than we've seen before.
Yeah, and I was reading a bit about Wisconsin early voting, and there were people lined up in places like Milwaukee today on the first day of early voting, and we've seen long lines in Texas, in Georgia, in other places where they do a lot of in-person early voting, and the numbers are much higher than anything we've ever seen before. And depending on different states are reporting different things as far as whether it's more Democrats or Republicans. It's hard to tell in some states because if people don't have to identify their party at some point, then you don't know who the voters are going to be. The consensus seems to be that it's more Democrats who are pursuing the option to early vote, but I'm kind of holding back on that until we get more data before I say that across the board, it's Democrats in every state that are pushing this.
And for a couple reasons, in part related to early voting, we might not have those earlier calls on states on election night that we're used to. Those, are never the official count anyway, but with exit polling and things like that, we have a pretty good sense of who's going to win in most states. That's not something, if I understand correctly, Susan, that we're going to be able to count on this year.
Yes, and that's because we have 50 states and the District of Columbia, and that makes for 51 different ways that ballots are counted. And in some states, for example, when you vote early, clerks are able to start tabulating those votes immediately. And when election night happens, you press a button and you've got those results already to add to whatever is going on actually on election day. Wisconsin, for example, is not that way. So in Wisconsin, clerks can't start counting the ballots until election day. And so Wisconsin is one of those states where they think that we might not know who wins Wisconsin on election night, because if there's a whole lot of early and absentee voting going on, then those absentee ballots can't be counted. And they won't be counted until election day and after. And so we just might not know. And there are other states that are considered battleground states that are similar in that way. So I think that there's been a big push to educate people to this idea that we may not know on election night who actually wins, and we may not know for a day or week after.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, about the home stretch in the presidential election campaign. Let's bring on another caller. Jeff is with us in Dubuque. Jeff, hi.
Yes, hi, Rob, and thank you for taking my call. Two questions. One is, can you give us a sense of the support for Mr. Trump among the religious right, the white evangelicals, whether that's remaining strong or weakening? And the second is, what impact has the criticism of Mr. Trump by some Republican senators, particularly the one in Nebraska, have on the electorate? And I'll listen to your answer on the radio.
Jeff, thanks a lot for calling in. So first, white evangelical voters or the religious right, Jeff says, do you see them supporting President Trump again this time around?
I haven't seen any significant drop in the support of white evangelicals for President Trump. I think that one of the reasons why they pushed so strongly on the Amy Coney Barrett nomination to the Supreme Court was to shore up the votes of religious conservatives. And what we wouldn't expect is that any of those white evangelicals, who tend to be quite conservative, to necessarily flip and vote for Joe Biden, because they would see him as being too liberal when you compare him to any Republican candidate. And so the issue becomes, will they come out in the strong numbers that they did in 2016 in support of President Trump, or will they decide to perhaps not participate?
And our caller also asked about criticism from Republicans. He referenced Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. I think he was referring to, we see an endorsement by former Republican National Committee Chair Michael Steele today. Is that something, though, that you see swaying Trump voters?
I mean, people, I would say, tend to look to opinion leaders to help them maybe make decisions about who they're going to vote for. But I don't think that it's necessarily to the point where a senator from Nebraska would impact a voter in Wisconsin, let's say. But perhaps in Nebraska, there are people who are strong supporters of Ben Sasse who might say, well, I'm on the fence, and Ben Sasse isn't so thrilled with Donald Trump, and therefore maybe I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump as a result. But my question always becomes, who are you going to vote for as an alternative? Because Ben Sasse did not come out and endorse Joe Biden. He was trying to come out and separate himself from Donald Trump. And that's often what we're seeing when someone like Ben Sasse or others at this point are being critical of the president.
And we have, in theory, a debate on Thursday. We got a message from CJ in Madison who wonders if the recent Hunter Biden story will be brought up at this week's debate. CJ says, I'd like to hear each candidate address it. This has been an ongoing target, Hunter Biden, of Joe Biden's son's business dealings. The story in the New York Post got a lot of attention, some questions about its, I guess, provenance. Do you expect to see talk about this if the debate, in fact, happens?
If I were the Trump campaign, I would encourage President Trump to bring it up, because what we saw in the first debate was that when talk of the president's children came up, it bothered Vice President Biden, as one would expect that it would. And so, speaking strategically, I would think that the Trump campaign would want to bring attention to that, because there are still these lingering questions in regard to Hunter Biden. And it also might, put Vice President Biden a bit on edge. And that would be beneficial from the perspective of the Trump campaign.
In our last few moments, do you see one more debate doing a lot to move the needle in any direction at this point, Susan, given that a lot of votes have already been cast?
Yeah, it's interesting because early, 2 months ago or 3 months ago when they were scheduling, when these debates had already been scheduled, the Trump campaign was kind of complaining that this last debate was too late anyway, because so many people will have voted. I think that at this point, most people have made up their minds, as I said. And so it's really mostly about getting your voters out. And so unless there's some major issue or concern that comes up at the debate, I don't necessarily see it moving the needle one way or the other.
Susan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Always happy to do it, Rob.
That's Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We talked to her today about the latest in the presidential campaign as we get closer and closer to Election Day and as voting continues here in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country. Wisconsin set multiple single-day records for new cases of COVID-19 over the last week and continues to be one of the country's pandemic hotspots. Today, the Department of Health Services reported 4,591 new cases and 33 deaths. It should be noted that the department's tracking system was down for maintenance on Saturday. It expected higher numbers in the following few days as it worked through the backlog of positive results. That said, hospitalizations have also gone up over the last week. More than 1,100 people are hospitalized for COVID-19 in Wisconsin, about 300 of them in intensive care. That's brought back worries about hospitals and clinics reaching capacity. A field hospital was put up at State Fair Park in Milwaukee last week, hasn't needed to be used yet. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about COVID-19? Are you curious about symptoms to watch out for, when to get tested, how it's spreading here in the state? If you work in healthcare, what has your experience been like? What are you seeing now? What do you want people to know about coronavirus? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Jeff Potthoff is Chief Quality and Safety Officer for UW Health. Dr. Potthoff, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, what are your thoughts and concerns, I guess, about our healthcare system and how it's dealing with these higher numbers?
Right now we're really concerned. The trajectory of COVID cases continues to skyrocket, and we're starting to run out of room. Even here at UW Health, we're meeting a handful of times a day, really trying to figure out how we can fit in all the patients that need our services right now. So it's a dicey situation. The healthcare systems are, getting pretty thin.
We've talked in the past about how to protect healthcare workers on the show. Do you feel like at least we've got that part of the story taken care of? We're taking good care of our nurses, doctors, and the staff that work in healthcare facilities?
Right now, I do believe we are. So, earlier on the pandemic, we had problems with personal protective equipment, single day on hands for the equipment that we needed to ensure that our staff could safely take care of patients. And that situation has improved. When I talk to nurses and staff on the units, they actually feel safer on a COVID unit than they do out in the community. They feel like they have what they need to stay protected on the unit. They're worried about being out in public because they know other people aren't taking measures that could then put their health in jeopardy.
Do they have thoughts, have you heard thoughts from the people you work with for the public on making those outside the hospital places a little safer and not spreading the disease?
Yeah, you know, when I talk to staff, I think, you know, for the most part, the community has been great in kind of lifting up and giving lots of allocades to our healthcare workers. And what I'm hearing them say now is, you know, it's great to say how much you appreciate us, but, you know, if you really appreciate what we're doing and how hard we're working, put your mask on and stay socially distanced. And this idea that, you know, actions speak louder than words. And that's really what we need to be doing right now. We've been saying it for a long time. And I think, you know, with the variable degree of pickup, but right now, more than ever, we have to abide by these public health measures if we want to get back on track, if we want to decrease the number of people who are getting sick, decrease the number of people who are dying, if we want the economy to get back, we need to start doing these things because right now it's pretty much out of control in Wisconsin.
Now, when we talk about hospital capacity, intensive care capacity, we often use the, you know, the number of beds. I know beds don't actually take care of the people, though. How are we doing with, I guess, staff energy levels and morale as these numbers go up?
Yeah, you know, I've been continually inspired by our staff because we keep asking more of them. I don't think any of us expected us to be in the place where we are right now, where, you know, instead of March or April being that, you know, worst of it, right now is the worst of it for healthcare workers. But they continue to come to work. They continue to work harder than we have any business asking them to work. And they keep giving and giving back to their community. I think, you know, they see this as their moment to shine. But, you know, that fatigue starts to wear them down. And, you know, when we talk about our ability to take care of patients, it really takes those three things. It takes a bed, but a bed also means, you know, the appropriate bed, the appropriate gas supplies so we can run ventilators. It means the appropriate ventilation system, so we need that. We need the appropriate equipment, ventilators, PPE, medications, things like that. And then we really need the appropriate staff. And, you know, right now, staffing is probably the constraint whereby we're already working everyone so hard. There isn't just a pool of nurses or doctors that we can just hire. It's really trying to make what we have go farther.
Talking to Dr. Jeff Potthoff, Chief Quality and Safety Officer at UW Health, looking at some of the latest COVID-19 news. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. I wonder if you could discuss the difference between cases and hospitalizations. We had a listing of the new cases down here, new positive tests, and they were virtually all young people who are at virtually no risk from this syndrome. And also, I think it would be useful for the reporting of hospitalizations to include the age of those patients, average age perhaps, and the comorbidities, you know, whether it be obesity or COPD or the regular flu, if they're testing for flu.
Yeah, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Go ahead, Dr. Potthoff.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things there. So there was, and there probably still is in some areas, maybe down in Dubuque, a predominance of cases that were in younger people. And, you know, when you look at a population as a whole, those people are less likely to need hospitalization. But at the same time, we absolutely are hospitalizing individuals that are, say, college-aged and things like that. You know, when the public health reports out data, I think there's a couple of things there. One, they start to worry about, you know, patient privacy, the more data they report on, you know, but I think, you know, one thing that can be somewhat misleading if we report on, you know, ages and comorbidities is there is this underlying thought that because it's more common for people of advanced age or comorbidities to do worse with COVID-19, if I'm not really old and I don't have comorbidities, this isn't such a big deal for me. And what we're seeing is that's just not holding true. Although there's a larger number of people who are going to be elderly and have comorbid conditions that end up in the hospital and don't make it. There are so many stories of people who are relatively young, don't really have any comorbidities, and they're ending up in the hospital on a ventilator. So I don't want people to think that just because they're young and they don't have comorbidities that COVID-19 doesn't apply to them. You really can't know what's going to happen to you if you get COVID-19 until it happens.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And something that struck me all along, we talk about, okay, yes, a lot of the people who have serious complications from COVID are older or have other comorbidities, but they all survived the last flu season, right? They had these problems and they made it through a pretty serious flu season. This is something worse, right?
Yeah, you still hear comparisons of, you know, flu to, you know, influenza to COVID-19. And, you know, I think that happened early on because COVID-19 was a new disease. You know, its symptoms, at least early on, are most similar to influenza. But if we look at two things, if we look at how contagious the two diseases are, COVID-19 is so much more contagious than influenza. It is so much easier to catch COVID-19 from someone else than it is to catch influenza. And then if you look at mortality, the mortality rate of COVID-19 is much higher than influenza. We've got so many people who have passed away from COVID-19. We don't see those kind of deaths in even really vigorous, strong influenza seasons. So although their original symptoms are somewhat similar, these are two very different diseases, and COVID-19 is by far the worst player.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Natalie with us, also in Dubuque. Must have a good signal in Dubuque today. Natalie, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I'm a nurse. I work at a hospital in Dubuque, and I feel like the public does not know the struggle that we have. And we have moved pediatrics off one floor. We've totally put it in total COVID. We don't have enough tests, so we don't test every patient that comes in. I work on a surgical floor now. We're taking medical and surgical. And we are taking care of patients that are untested. And I had two patients one day that were turned out to be positive. I got COVID from that. I was sick for 5.5 weeks. It took me 3 more weeks to get up to par to work back on my 3 12-hour shifts. And, you know, it's just the nurses are giving everything they can. And I think the people are just sick of, in the community, are sick of COVID, and so they think they're fine, but we're struggling, and we still don't have enough tests to test every patient, and we haven't had enough N95s for us to wear them on the floor when we're working with these unknown, untested patients. So it's not good, and we're in a red zone right now, too. We're really popping up.
Natalie, I'm glad you're covered. Thanks for calling in and sharing your story there. Dr. Potthoff, and I've heard this at some places elsewhere, still cases where there aren't enough masks, for example, or tests for hospitals to use them as much as they want.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. There's some regional variation. I think there's some health systems who have been able to keep up and they have enough to, you know, take care of their people. But there's other areas where they're still struggling, whether it's with the ability to do testing, whether it's the ability to have absolutely everything you need as far as PPE. And I think Anneli's got a point where there's a lot of people in our communities who don't know someone yet who had COVID-19 or haven't lost someone to COVID-19. And although that's changing as cases increase, I think there's an underappreciation of just how serious this disease can be and how hard it is for these healthcare workers to keep coming back every day, working harder than they've ever worked with all this uncertainty about, you know, are they going to be safe? Are they going to get the disease? Are they going to have what they need? It's just a really challenging time for healthcare workers in these environments to provide the kind of care that they want to provide to people.
Talking to Dr. Jeff Potthoff, Chief Quality and Safety Officer at UW Health, with us to talk about trends in the COVID-19 pandemic in Wisconsin and how hospitals are coping. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in healthcare? Has your daily reality been changed by the rise in COVID-19 cases lately? What do you want people to know? For anyone, what questions do you have about the coronavirus and how it's spreading in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Dr. Jeff Potthoff, Chief Quality and Safety Officer at UW Health, looking at the COVID-19 pandemic, taking your questions and experiences at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, hi.
Hey, I don't want to sound spiteful, but we had one guy at work. He got the COVID virus. He was in a different department. It was okay. We kept working. We were essential workers. Well, then another guy in my department got it, and he's like, nope. He's like, I'm fine. I just got allergies or I got a cold. So I worked next to him for about the whole day, and Thursday I started to have a cough, and my chest started to hurt a little bit, and ever since then it went downhill. It just makes me mad that my company doesn't value us enough to shut down. So now I'm waiting for my test. I mean, I was in the ER Sunday and she's like, yep, you've got the classic symptoms of COVID. And so they gave me the really nasty COVID test, which was horrible. And I'm just off work until I find out, but I'm expecting to be sick and my whole family's getting sick. So it's just, it's a nightmare.
Nick, I'm so sorry to hear that. Best to you and your family and your coworkers too. Dr. Potthoff, what can we do at work sites or wherever people gather when we get that first case to make sure to limit its ability to spread to other people?
Yeah, I think this is a really difficult problem. I think there's two parts of it. So, you know, one, there's, you know, personal responsibility on behalf of each of us. And, you know, most years, if we had a little bit of a sniffle, we might attribute it to allergies. We might think it's nothing. Unfortunately, this year, we hear time and time again where someone thought it was nothing, then it got worse, they test positive, and now they have all this regret because they exposed all of their friends to a disease that hasn't been a great player. People get real sick from it. And then I think from the employer side, employers, for the most part, if you're sick, you shouldn't come to work. But they're trying to balance keeping the business open versus this public health interest, the safety of their workers. And it's really hard to do. So, I mean, I think, you know, the advice I'd give is right now, if you've got any symptoms, whether you think it's allergies, common cold, if something isn't exactly right with you, be very cautious with that. You know, call your doctor or try to get tested if you have those symptoms. Because you don't want to be that guy who then passed the disease on to other people. You might do fine, but they might not. And I don't think anyone wants to be the reason that someone else had a really bad outcome.
Thanks again, and best to you with that result. And I hope you get through this okay. Back to our callers, Kim in Southwest Wisconsin. Kim, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a school nurse, and from talking with my school nurse colleagues, we all agree that, you know, we're doing a really good job in our buildings with our kids, keeping them 6 feet apart, wearing their masks, doing all the things that have been asked of us. But what we're seeing is that we're really busy with kids who have to be sent home, or because they're positive contacts from parents and grandparents. I don't see any of the extracurricular activities in our life decreasing at all. There's still the large group gatherings, the dance competitions, groups, big sport events, things like that. And so when the parents are positive, or grandparents, aunt and uncles, you know, the kids have to stay home. And so we're busy, you know, getting our kids who were in the building to virtual learning. You know, I think schools are doing a very good job. It's just that activities with our parents are not slowing down.
Kim, thanks a lot for the call. And Dr. Potthoff, people have made the case if we want schools open and kids in schools, it's going to involve sacrifices in other parts of our lives.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So all of this is interconnected, and we've seen it a bunch of times now where the actual school districts have really robust plans in place. They're doing everything right, but they still get foiled because kids are potentially contracting COVID-19 from outside the school environment, and then they bring it into the school environment. And where that really challenges the schools is they typically don't have robust health structures in schools. You don't have four people who can go do contact tracing and really get that figured out very quickly. And that's one of the reasons you're seeing a lot of schools having to close for a week or 2 weeks. They've had an outbreak. They don't have the resources to contact trace and know who's at risk and who's not. So the only option you have at that point is to shut it down. If we want schools to be open, it's more than just assuming the schools are taking the right steps to keep your kids safe. It's each of us taking the right steps in our personal lives to ensure that our kids aren't coming into school and infecting other kids, putting that whole entire process at risk.
Thanks for that call. Talking to Dr. Jeff Potthoff from UW Health about the latest COVID-19 news in Wisconsin. Back to your calls. Dave is with us in Sussex. Dave, hello.
Hi. Hey, first of all, I'd like to start off by saying Natalie called a little earlier. She's a healthcare worker. The number one thing is hats off to all the healthcare workers and the frontline people that are doing their job day after day, 12 hours, 16-hour shifts. It's a tough job. And we all appreciate that. So first of all, I wanted to let Natalie and everyone else in that field know that they are appreciated, and that they do need to hear that, because it's important that we all need to feel that we are appreciated. And hands down, you are. Okay, so thank you for everything you do, Natalie. Also, Jim called in a little earlier. I agree with what Jim was getting at. Thanks for calling, Jim. My point is, I think that we need to take a step back and look at what's really going on here. So there's a virus that's going to circulate. You can't hide from it. Everybody's going to get it. Sooner or later, you're going to get it. You can't hide. You can't isolate. You can't not go here, not go there, change your entire life because of this little virus. Most of the people, 90% of people, have very little or no symptoms. There's people that are going to die from the virus. There's no doubt about it. And that's the way it is. You die from the flu. You die from this, that, and the other thing. People die. Millions of people every year die. There's whatever. You can't get away from it. You can't hide from the virus. So at what cost are you gonna live your life by?
Right? Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Potthoff, we do have a pretty big excessive death toll over our usual amount year to year. What do you think about or what do you want to say to Dave?
Yeah, you know, I'm not quite as fatalistic as Dave is. So, you know, one thing I worry about with COVID-19 is we don't have good treatments for it. You know, if you have a heart attack, I have things I can do to, you know, fix you from that. If you have a stroke, I've got things I can do. With COVID-19, I don't have much that I can do. There's a lot of people dying from it. You know, there is actually a path that isn't just waiting for everyone to get it and a flip of the coin to see whether you make it or not. I think the strategy where we try to avoid getting it until we have a safe and effective vaccine, it's going to save a lot of lives, millions of lives. This idea that if we just all go about our lives and wait to get the virus and then see what happens, that's a strategy that's going to cost us tens of millions of Americans. And I just have a hard time getting behind a strategy that results in millions of people dying who probably didn't have to die. So although it's uncomfortable and it's not fun and it's going to have a toll on our economy, I really am behind this idea that we wear a mask when we're out in public. It's inconvenient, but it's not that hard to do. We physically distance from each other because we care about each other. We got each other's backs. And then when that vaccine comes out, we all line up. We get a safe and effective vaccine. We'll make sure that the experts concur that this is the way we need to go. And then we develop herd immunity through a vaccine, and COVID-19 goes away, and there's 10, 20 million people alive that otherwise wouldn't be alive. That's really the vision that I have for how we get through this. I just can't get behind the idea that there's nothing we can do, so we should just get on with life. And if a whole bunch of people die, that's just, you know, that's just okay. I can't do that.
Back to time for one more call. I think Frank is driving just outside of Madison. Frank, hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead, Frank.
Well, just a quick story about a coworker and that COVID is real. Spent all summer social distancing, wearing masks, working staggered work hours. This guy is 59 years old, and he had to have some other treatment. He actually had to have some chemotherapy, and of course, a lot of people, like the previous callers, can say that's, you know, his tough luck, but he went in for the chemotherapy. Someone came in the office, was coughing, said it was an allergy, but they tested positive. He tested positive. They gave him remdesivir, discharged him. He was back in like 3 days later, went in the ICU unit at Wausau, and died last Friday. Total time frame of 2 weeks from finding out he was positive till he died.
Frank, thank you. I'm sorry for the loss of your coworker. Thank you for sharing the story. Dr. Potthoff, just in our last few moments, another reminder to take this seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I hate hearing these stories, and I've heard far too many of them over the last several months of people who are suffering because someone that they cared about, someone that they loved, got this disease and died from it. And that story keeps on happening. And the really sad thing about that is there are things that we can do. There's behaviors that we can adopt that will prevent people from dying. And it's wearing the mask, it's social distancing, and it's, you know, washing your hands. And right now, Wisconsin, we need to do this. You know, that's the message that we need to get out there. We're in control of our own destiny. We just have to make the right decisions.
Dr. Potthoff, thanks for joining us again.
You bet.
It's Dr. Jeff Potthoff from UW Health with us to talk about the latest news on COVID-19 in Wisconsin.